Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Michael Toper. Each week, we visit with a local author, or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work. We hope for a glimpse into their lives, find out what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. We're delighted to have Michael Toper visit our show this week. Welcome, Michael. Michael was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and lived there until he was 8 years old. But when his mother was hospitalized for severe depression, his father sent him to live with his uncle, a thoracic surgeon in Dallas, Texas. In 1962-3, Michael lived with his uncle's family in Kabul, Afghanistan. Dr. Shaw was teaching surgery to Afghan and Indian students. So that year, Michael was able to travel to Pakistan, India, and Nepal. Then Michael spent 4 years in the United States Air Force as a weather observer during the Vietnam War and immigrated to Canada when his tour of duty ended. He studied at the universities of Michigan, Guam, York, and Toronto, and has worked as a psychoeducational consultant and is the co-founder and director of Green Oaks Educational Services. He's been writing poetry for over 50 years. So, Michael, over 50 years takes us back to the 60s when you were still at school. Who or what events sparked your interest in writing poetry?
Well, that many years helps explain all of my white hair. I really enjoyed my time in Kabul, living with my uncle's family. The first week I was there, I wondered where I was. We had a locust invasion and an earthquake of 6.4 on the Richter scale. So I was worried, actually, that the end of days was here upon us. I had the great fortune to attend a international high school, Kabul International High School. They had only 45 students from all over the world. And I also had the great fortune to have a dynamic young teacher, Cornelia Sheffy, whom everybody called Corky, who was a recent graduate of Wellesley College for my grade 10 English teacher. She taught me a simple but profound truth. Poetry was a creative instrument whereby you could express feeling and confront the problem of existence. I have never forgotten her lesson.
Well, it was interesting. You certainly got a welcome to Kabul.
yes, I did.
And you said that your poem, The Trip, is a look back at your abrupt journey to Texas when you were only 8. Tell us a little more about that disruption in your life and what prompted your poem when you actually wrote it. Have you written other poems about events in your childhood?
I have, but I'll first start with The Trip. My mother, as you mentioned, suffered from severe depression, and as a young child, I wasn't aware of that. When I was 8, she was put in a private sanitarium for 6 months at a cost of $16,000 in 1955. This bankrupted my father, who was only making about $6,000 a year as a furniture designer, refinisher, and upholsterer. My father tried to get legal custody of me once my mother was hospitalized, but the judge refused and, in fact, told him that he had never given sole custody of a child to a man, and my father was not going to be the first. So my father found this a hard decision to live with, and he managed, as you mentioned, Felicity, to have me go and live with my uncle's family in Dallas, Texas at age 8. And that's really the introduction to the poem, The Trip. And I've also written other poems about my childhood. I wrote an interesting poem called Horseplay that obliquely looks at the Cold War in the United States at that time with Russia. I was very afraid of the possibility of nuclear bombs hitting Dallas, and I used to have nightmares about that event.
I think, actually, that most of us who lived through the Cold War had those moments when we thought the world wasn't going to last too long. don't you think?
Yeah, that's...
I think it was a time, that's
well put. And what was very interesting, I didn't understand why, but at school, we had nuclear air raid drills where you would go in the hall, sit down, and put your hands behind your back. And I asked my aunt at the time, what would happen if they dropped a bomb on Dallas? And she was cooking hamburgers and turned and said, do you really want to know, Mike? And I said, yes, Aunt Ruth. And she said, well, the whole city would be obliterated in about in less than half a second. And I thought to myself, why am I in the hall at school with my hands behind my back? I'd like to read the trip if I could.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yes, that would be just perfect.
It's a narrative prose poem, The Trip. In August 1955, an 8-year-old boy is driven to Detroit, where he is loaded on a noisy DC-3 at night for the trip to Dallas, to join the family of his mother's brother, Robert Shaw, a thoracic surgeon. Fragments of that journey remain. An American Airlines stewardess calmed his childhood fears with a soft drink and two fluffy pillows that he clutched safely and tightly as the DC-3 made scheduled stopovers in Chicago and Detroit. In the humidity of Love Field, Aunt Ruth and Uncle Bob meet Mikey at the plane. The nice stewardess says goodbye. And those strangers he does not yet know put him in a car and drive off to their home. Soon, Mikey will learn to stutter, often wet the bed, as bad dreams tell the boy he must have been an extremely wicked child for his parents to have abandoned him. Years later, the child inside looks at his mother, who he barely remembers, as they sit together outside her locked mental ward at a picnic table on the grounds of her home at Ypsilanti State Hospital, where she has lived for 11 years. The fact of impending adulthood has taught him to understand the history of her severe depression and many failed shock treatments. Surely, no one here was to blame. But he remains silent when she asks, why don't you go to church?
Thank you, Michael. That was great. I've got one more question for you before the end of this segment. So, you studied at 4 universities and became a psychoeducational consultant and still work in that field with young people needing help. But what else did you study in those years at these institutions? What studies or experiences proved to be most important for your work as a poet?
Felicity, I'll be honest with you. I think I was a fish out of water. And I say that because even though I studied psychology as a way to hopefully make a living someday, I really wasn't interested in math or science very much. And I much preferred talking about ideas, writing about ideas and concepts, taking courses in the humanities, studying medieval iconology and Russian literature, modern poetry. I attended York University for my undergraduate years, and I had two wonderful teachers there. Don Coles, who is a well-known Canadian poet, mm-hmm. was a humanities teacher. And he and I had a lot of mud wrestles about my essays in terms of using highfalutin language. And Don taught me to turn it down eventually. I also had a wonderful religious instructor for a number of religious courses I took, Saul Tannenzaff, a rabbi. And he was very much a professor who liked to talk about the meaning of scripture and confront students about their beliefs and ideas. So I was very excited about my time at York University in terms of studying those courses. So even though I ended up in the field of school psychology, I don't think that's where my heart and soul is.
Well, we've got a moment or two, Michael. Have you got another poem there that you could read to us before the break?
Felicity, I would like to do that. It's called The Lost Mother, and this was a poem that took many years for me to formulate and write, and I think it was a way to deal with, in a sense, growing up without my birth mother being my mother, mm-hmm. and the lost years and the emotional, dare I say, damage that caused in my mm-hmm. life. I also unfortunately inherited the Shaw family depression gene as well as my mother. But this is called The Lost Mother. I want to believe you are still in the ground in Michigan, cleaning out your bones, making a fragile tunnel for the telescope of God to peer into. The frayed curtains of your face begin to fade. The subterfuge of your private madness leaks out in me. You were tall, thin, and ethereal, shaking at the end, your hands like silverfish heading out through long grass at twilight. That disquiet, that fetter, comes back to me. The piano of your Chopin on Sunday afternoons rose through the parlor as Terry the dog accompanied you in atonal harmony, while I, small child, took note in a book of hours, so that today I might implore you, mother, if there be a music in our spheres and a celestial harmony that lasts, come back. You who birthed me so late in life, almost as an afterthought. I will sit gladly at your feet as you open the picnic basket, take out and spread on the grass enough joy for both of us to eat.
That is a lovely poem. Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you. That poem actually was based on a picture, one of the few pictures of I have with my mother and I together outside having a picnic. Mm. And I was about 3 years old, I think.
Well, thank you. Now we'll take a short break.